Welcome to Attention Confidential, the podcast where we explore deep self-awareness, bold curiosity, and passionate advocacy for both ourselves and our communities. I'm Maggie Green, and I'll be your guide on this journey. Now, my goal for this show is threefold. I want to hold space, ask the big and tough questions, and ultimately amplify the voices that need it most.
Hey, weirdos and queerdos, in support of safety, please be advised that this podcast contains explicit language and direct or indirect references to material which some listeners may find triggering. Topics are highly personal and intimate, likely to touch on themes including but not limited to abuse, bigotry, body image, disability, mental health, sexuality, and trauma. Please prioritize your safety and the safety of those around you who may be exposed to this material, especially young folks. Please also note this is an ongoing project, which means I am actively engaged in learning while creating. The format, the tools, and skills to produce this material are all new to me. As I build and refine, I ask that you understand there may be kinks along the way. And because transparency is one of my core values, I should also share that I am using software that includes enhanced features to simplify the editing and post-production process. Any editing of this content, however, this original, organic, human-generated content, is done so at my discretion, specifically to optimize sound quality, not to manipulate, omit, or alter any substantive material in the recordings.
Now, this first season, aptly named the Tragic Optimist Tour, unfolds in parallel with the literal journey of a lifetime, a kind of personal and professional odyssey of my own. Against the backdrop of a tumultuous political climate that we find ourselves in, where our nation's most vulnerable people have been victimized, vilified, and outright erased, I made the decision to embark on an epic road trip in an attempt to process it all, make it make sense, learn more about the experiences that we share, to take it all in. What I discovered was equal parts beauty and terror, joy and pain. Truly the definition of tragic optimism. In a period of 30 days, I drove across 30 U.S. states and two Canadian provinces with the mission to connect with as many clients, collaborators, and community members as I could in celebration of my 5-year business anniversary, a milestone I thought I might never see.
I'm calling this inaugural season of the podcast the Tragic Optimist Tour, inspired by the teachings and philosophies of Viktor Frankl, who was, among other things, an author, a poet, a philosopher, and a Holocaust survivor. This concept of tragic optimism acknowledges that joy and pain must coexist, that pushing forward through the muck is worth it, even when it feels impossible. And maybe, just maybe, there's something that can be learned from it, some special meaning in all the madness. And because context is so important, there are also a handful of solo episodes like this one to provide more background color and emotional depth that speak to the tone and setting surrounding these shared moments and stories. Up next, more about the Tragic Optimist Tour and some of my key takeaways from this life-changing experience. I promise you all a handful of solo episodes peppered throughout season one. I'm back now and wanted to take some time to reflect on the conversations that we've heard so far, give you an idea of what to expect for the remainder of the season, and of course, following the format of the three key themes, the mirror, the magnifying glass, and the megaphone, I do have some personal insights to share, both from the experience on the road, as well as the greater metaphor for my life and our collective experience as humans. You know, just keeping it nice and light around here on Attention Confidential. By this point, since the last solo episode, episode 7, you all have heard from Jess, Kevin, Ruby, and Amanda. So I wanted to help kind of fill in some gaps, again, as I've done with previous solo episodes, provide some emotional context and share with you all kind of what was happening and the things that I was learning. Following the visit with Shelley in Virginia, really starting at that point, everything that came thereafter was completely new
territory. Had not ever really spent any time in the Northeast region of the United States. Had never been to Pennsylvania, for example. Got to spend a lot of time there all over the state in different locations. So it was really interesting seeing the changes in landscape, the changes in the environment, as well as just kind of experiencing that novelty anyway. So because everything was new, that meant that that which was familiar was behind me. So everything in front of me was unknown. That included the travel experience, that included the people that I was meeting in person for the very first time, specifically, again, Jess, Kevin, Ruby, and Amanda. When I think about the time spent with Jess, of course, that was an incredibly emotional and moving and heavy conversation to have leading up to that interaction. There was also a bit of stress kind of going into it. We had originally made plans with one of my former clients in upstate New York, which I had shared a family member was experiencing a health crisis, and so she was not able to host us as originally planned. That meant on the fly, we needed to figure out some different accommodations. So we made the decision to push forward a little bit faster and sooner towards the next destination, which would have been New Hampshire, to connect with Jess. That also meant a much longer time span on the road before we got to that overnight destination. So fortunately, doing that made, you know, the time with Jess and those plans run a lot more smoothly. You know, we were already in the area, could get a full night's rest and a little bit of a later start on the day before meeting with Jess, which was really helpful. And leading up to that, spending that much time in the car together was difficult. Navigating, for example, large metro areas like Boston and Buffalo, driving at night. Fortunately, there were two of us to split the drive, to take breaks if we needed to. That was definitely helpful. We got to drive through Vermont, a state that I had never visited. My travel companion had never visited before, and we're driving through it as the sun was setting. The physical surroundings, the lighting, the foliage, the bodies of water, but also this sense that some places were sort of frozen in time. It was an incredible experience. I'm still kind of processing what seeing and driving through Vermont was like. Inside the vehicle, we were oohing and aahing. I lost my voice almost entirely and had a sore throat that evening just from that like vocalization of surprise and delight at the sheer beauty. Gigantic purple mountains and rolling hills, boulders and rock formations, like tiny little mountains riddling each side of these really small and narrow and winding switchback state roads. It was incredible. I would love to go back. I have no connections in Vermont, but if I think about any place I might want to revisit and explore a bit more, that's definitely on the list. By the time we met with Jess, we had been through this full sort of spectrum of emotions, physical challenges as well in terms of like managing our energy level and making sure that we got a good meal and enough rest. You've heard from Kevin at this point. As with Jess, this is the first time meeting Kevin in person. After interacting online for several years, I met Kevin through a mutual connection and dear friend who manages a Discord server for creative, ethical entrepreneurs. I was really excited to spend some quality time with Kevin. Really grateful for his flexibility, for his level of care and communication, and also being willing to travel to meet my travel companion and I at a geographically convenient spot along our route. That spot was on the beach of the Atlantic, Old Orchard Beach in Maine. Hannah had not ever seen the Atlantic Ocean, so this was a huge milestone for them. And I was really excited to be able to share that and bear witness to that moment. And I'm thinking about Pennsylvania. Before we saw Kevin and before we saw Jess, we got to spend some time with Amanda and Ruby individually in their homes and also together. Ruby ended up joining us on the trip up to see Amanda in Lancaster from Philly. And that was fantastic. After being friends and interacting with Amanda and Ruby for as many or more years as with Kevin, I met Ruby through the Discord server. Agni Hogaboom, this is a shout out for you. Thank you for being you, for providing such a cool space, and for fostering these amazing creative connections. I really appreciate the opportunity to connect with these folks. And so to bring that full circle in a physical shared space was amazing. It really meant so much to me. Hugging them felt like hugging family. Same with Kevin. I've known you all these years, and finally being able to bring that physical component in was profound. It was really special, not only to meet them in their environment, see them in their element, get to interact with them kind of day in the life of, but also spend time with their animals and their pets and just geek out over cats and their quirky behaviors and their different personalities. It was really cool. On the topic of food, I just want to give Ruby a shout out for the amazing spread of vegetarian tacos. It's probably one of the best meals I had on the entire trip. Just awesome. Down to the smallest detail, salsa, sour cream, avocado, beans, rice, all the good stuff. Thinking about all of the different meals, including, holy shit, the hot pot that Amanda put on. It was like an entire production, you know, multi-phase process. And they did it with such ease and care and enthusiasm. Like, I could tell that they enjoyed providing that as much as we enjoyed consuming it. It was really special. When we were in Maine, my travel companion had never tried lobster before. We both grew up in Kentucky, which is a landlocked state. They've had seafood, but they had never experienced lobster. And when I'm thinking about the different places that we visited, like clearly Philly, I think of cheesesteak, so I made sure that we had that experience. Chicago, deep dish pizza, bagels in New York. We're in Maine. I was like, we gotta have lobster. I think I want to kind of use this food piece, these amazing home-cooked meals, as kind of a jumping-off point for the mirror segment. And the thing that comes to mind is this idea of safe foods. Folks out there, listeners who are neurodivergent, perhaps have ADHD, other maybe history of disordered eating, anything like that, you may be familiar with the term safe foods. So safe foods, this describes a food item that is kind of a trusted go-to. The definition of safe varies from person to person, and the characteristics about a food item that make it safe is highly individualized as well. Sometimes it's about texture. Sometimes it's about consistency, as far as it's going to be the same and reliable each time. That tends to be a standout characteristic. Sometimes it's a flavor profile or a temperature type of thing. It could be seasonal. That is certainly true for me. But I thought I might talk a little bit about safe foods and also invite you all into the conversation. If you have safe foods, or you are familiar with this concept, I'm curious what your safe foods are, what the circumstances around those choices, or those maybe in the absence of choices, your go-tos when you can't make a choice or you feel burdened with decision fatigue. What are those things for you? What is it about them that stands out to you? What is it about those food items that make you feel safe? I have mentioned the Caesar salad in Reno multiple times and talked around it, but haven't actually shared what went down about that. But I got to talk about the Caesar salad, because Caesar salad, as a general rule, is a safe food for me. If we're going out to a new restaurant that I've never tried before, no matter where I am, what the context is, how I'm feeling, generally always a Caesar salad is what I will order. It's one of the first things I look for on a menu, because sometimes new textures, new flavors can be overwhelming. If I'm in a new space, want to like minimize my anxiety, I'm working through those symptoms, and I want to be able to get through this meal without losing my appetite or rejecting the food because there's an issue with the texture or whatever. So I found Caesar salad is one of those safe foods for me. I was like, if the in-house restaurant at this casino has a Caesar salad, that's what I'm going to be having for dinner that night. I was very stressed, extremely exhausted, had spent a very long time on the road by myself, and was really ready to just like eat and call it a day. I didn't know anyone in Reno, so I ended up calling my partner and we're looking at the restaurant menu together and kind of weighing some options. I was like, I'm going to get my shit together. I'm going to go down to the restaurant, order a Caesar salad. And I was like, you know what might be cool is if we had like a phone date, like a virtual dinner date. Like I can continue talking with my partner, have a little dinner date while I eat alone in the restaurant. That's going to help me feel more comfortable. I've had issues in the past with panic and anxiety around eating in public, eating around other people, but also eating alone in restaurants. I won't say I've fully overcome that, but certainly in this like emotionally vulnerable state, I needed to pull together some resources to make me feel more safe and comfortable. And in that instance, it was keeping that line of communication open with my partner through that dinner experience. So sounded like a good plan. I don't know, listeners, you tell me, like, is that a strange thing to like have a virtual dinner date? Have you ever done anything like that before? Very curious. Let me know if you have or if you haven't. So I go down to the restaurant. I've got my partner in one of my earbuds, right? And there's the hostess that greets everyone coming into the restaurant. And I said, you know, it's just me and I want to make this really easy for you all, having a virtual date with my partner. I'm going to have dinner. So if you have like a table that's kind of off to the side, I don't want to bother anybody or disrupt anybody else's meals or anything like that. And the hostess pointed me to this empty seating area near the bar. It wasn't the actual bar, but it was like adjacent to it. I was like, that is freaking perfect. It's exactly what I asked for. Off to the side, not, you know, in the main dining room area where a lot of people were. Just kind of like chill over here where I can have a little bit of privacy and quiet, my Caesar salad and get the hell out of there and go to bed. That's what I had hoped. That's what I really wanted and needed in that moment. But that is not what happened. No one has come to ask me about a drink. No one has brought silverware. There's like no acknowledgement at all that I am there to have a meal. And so I'm kind of looking around, trying to not like flag someone down, but just like make contact with someone, perhaps the bartender or the bus person or even the hostess. Like, hey, I would really love a glass of water. I don't have any silverware yet. Not in a hurry to place my order, but I am here to have a meal. So I finally get someone's attention. It's like, would it be okay? You know, can I have a glass of water and some silverware? The menu, like, I'd love to place an order. Eventually, someone brings a glass of water, silverware, and a menu. And then it's like another 10 minutes before anyone comes around again. In the meantime, the bus person comes over and says that I'm not allowed to sit there. And I was like really confused because the hostess sat me there and I assumed it was okay. The bus person tells me that they're going to have to speak with the manager to verify that it's okay for me to sit in the spot. And I said, oh no. Please, no need to do that. I'm happy to relocate. You just let me know where you would like for me to sit. I don't want to cause any trouble. Don't want to get anybody else in trouble. Where would you like me to sit? So they kind of usher me to this two-top over in the main dining area, kind of on the end. Apparently, this is the bartender's section, and the bar was much closer to where I was seated before. And I've had zero interaction with the bartender at this point. I understand, based on the information that I was given, that the bartender is the person who's going to take my order. I've been sitting within 10 feet of the bartender for like 20 minutes and no interaction at all. So I'm telling my partner this, like, kind of as it's unfolding, kind of embarrassed because I told him I wasn't allowed to sit here. On top of this, knowing the triggering, challenging, and loaded relationship I have with food, anytime there's any stress or anxiety in a food-related environment, I will typically have a panic attack or a total meltdown. I'm really proud and surprised to share I kept my cool this entire time. I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that I had that open line of communication with my partner, someone who has seen me at my worst around food, seen me at my worst without food, and kind of knew what a big deal it was for me to enjoy this meal or try to enjoy this meal alone in not only a public space, but a casino environment, which I'll get into a little bit later why that was so fraught. But I managed to keep my cool even as the situation escalated. And as I'm telling the story, I'm like, was it really that big of a deal? I thought it was going to be so simple. I could just be seated. No one would bother me. I wouldn't bother anyone. I'd order a Caesar salad. I eat it. I'd pay the check and leave, right? Maybe half an hour from start to finish the entire experience, all the while talking with my partner on the phone. But it was not that simple. So at this point, I've had interactions with the hostess's assistant or expo person. I don't know what this person's role was, and the bus person. The bartender comes over to take my order and is clearly frazzled. It is busy. There's a lot of customers. Her attention was divided. Totally appreciate that. I reassured her, like, I'm not in a hurry. Take your time. I just really want a Caesar salad and an iced tea, and I'm going to sit here on the phone with my partner having a virtual date. So the bartender takes my order and then disappears. Then at some point, the hostess, the original person who sat me, comes around to like check on me and apologized for the bus person saying that I wasn't allowed to sit there. Sorry, they made a big deal about talking to the manager, and I was like, oh no, you know, I hope they didn't get in trouble. I didn't know, and it really doesn't matter. Like, whatever is easiest for you all. Again, I don't want to be any trouble. Still on the phone with my partner, and he is listening to all of this and is like, oh my God, you know, cackling, like, just at how big of a deal this turned out to be, right? So the hostess says, you know, honey, you're fine, don't worry about it. Said something about the bus person, like they didn't know. I don't remember exactly what was said. But the next thing I know, the manager, who I assume is the manager, comes out and kind of makes a round in the dining room and is like, obviously, like, looking in my direction to like figure out what the situation is, like kind of keeping an eye on me. A little bit of time passes and here comes the salad. It's a beautiful Caesar salad. It's got blackened shrimp on the top, which is like an extra special treat. You can see the actual anchovies. I know that the croutons are homemade. It is cold. The plate had been on ice, so the plate was cold. It was just like everything. Probably the best Caesar salad I've ever had in my entire life, if it were not for the circumstances surrounding this goddamn salad. So it was probably like the floor manager, right? Front of house manager had made the rounds, came back around and checked with me about the meal. I was like, it's delicious. Do you need anything? I don't need anything. And then I'm assuming this was more like general manager. This was clearly like executive level staff, definitely more supervisory. They sort of parked themselves and propped themselves up against the little pony wall that was attached to the table, the side table that they had originally sat me at, which faced the entire dining room. And I was on the end, so they were the closest to me of anybody in the space. And they just sort of stood there and looked around, side-eyed, and looked at me. I was like, I don't know what's going on. Again, I'm trying so hard to just be invisible. It's like, I was wrapping up the meal and I'm looking to make contact with someone about getting the check. So the bus person was making the rounds. I see them come close enough where I can get their attention. I have not seen the bartender at all. Person comes and said, I'm looking for someone to bring the check. Whenever you get a chance, if you could let them know. They apologize. Absolutely. We'll get on it. No problem. How was your meal? It was delicious. Thank you so much. This has been great. Then the bartender comes along to see how things are going. I'm done eating at this point and would like my check, which I said, I'm finished up here. Whenever you get a chance, I'd like the check. So this is two people now I've asked about the check. She says, no worries. I'll go print it out. I'll be right back. A few minutes go by. She brings the check. And I made a point to tell her that it was the most delicious Caesar salad. Before I could even get the full sentence out, she cut me off and was like, oh, good. That's great to hear. Sorry, I'm just really busy. Here's your check. Have a nice evening. So I'm trying to give her a compliment and cannot even get the full sentence out. And my partner on the other end of the line is just losing it at this point. Did she just cut you off in the middle of a compliment? Yeah, she did. And somehow, I'm still not losing my shit. I'm still keeping my cool. I managed to eat the entire salad and drink most of my beverage without feeling any, like, ick about getting the food down, which happens a lot if I experience anxiety. I managed to keep my cool. But over one Caesar salad and a glass of iced tea that I was hoping to have just invisibly off to the side, not be a bother to anyone, turned into interactions with basically every level of staff in the entire restaurant hierarchy. And I cannot even believe that as I'm telling this story right now. I couldn't make it up if I fucking tried. It was a lot. So I was like ready to run away. Get me out of here so I can just like process and actually feel all the things, the impact of that experience. It was rough. Really, all that to say, like, safety and food, like the intersection of those two things, are a really big deal for me. Another safe food from the trip is a variation of a safe food that I go to here at home a lot. I will have like a toasted sandwich with some kind of cheese, usually cheddar cheese, arugula, my favorite salad green, and also apricot something, jam, preserves, whatever. So cheese, arugula, apricot on toast. I eat that as a sandwich all the time. On the trip, because of the logistics involved in like spooning out preserves and things like that, I stuck with cheese and arugula. Pretty much every day that I was on the road and traveling, I had at least one cheese and arugula sandwich. It was great. Felt balanced as far as like fiber and protein and carbohydrates. It was just enough energy without being too much like sugar or whatever that I might get tired or lose stamina. Great fuel. Another safe food, both on the trip and here at home, that also came in handy, squeezable fruit and veggie pouches. We call it fruit splooge in our household, but it is a regular fixture that we always have on hand. It's a mix of fruit and vegetables, and it's basically like a baby food kind of texture, a little more substantial than a smoothie or like a protein shake type of texture, but it's got a lot of nutrients and it's really easy to consume. Twist the cap off, squeeze it in. Of course, there's a taste involved and a texture, which can sometimes be challenging if I don't have an appetite, but it's easy and fast enough to like get me where I need to be in my brain to make a choice about actual food. It also will carry me through as a meal supplement in situations where I don't have access to prepare a meal, as on this road trip. So lots of squeezable fruit and vegetable pouches. I mentioned as far as safe foods in general, obviously this can be different for different people, but there are certain foods that I find are safe depending on the time of year. Like they're my go-to backup, trusty, reliable food item for specific times of the year. So in the cold weather months, like fall and winter, oatmeal is that thing for me. And there are different ways that I prepare it. My standard involves coconut oil and raisins and pepitas or sunflower seeds, a little bit of honey. That's like fall and winter go-to. In the summer, it's always fresh fruit and yogurt. I can't eat those things on the off seasons. So cannot do oatmeal when it's hot outside. Cannot do yogurt when it is cold outside. I don't know why, but it is a thing I have tried. Especially in the transitional months where it's like still a little bit hot outside, not quite cold enough for oatmeal. I might do raw oats mixed with yogurt in the kind of in-between times, but pretty strict about those two things. And oatmeal and yogurt are safe foods for me, at least on a seasonal basis. Definitely have issues with textures, any kind of like sensory experience externally, but primarily with food as well. I'm weird about gummy and chewy textures. Like I have a hard time sometimes with steamed things, have like a chewy texture. I love crunchy. I love soft and cakey and bready and things like that. I certainly love cold and smooth, like the squeezable fruit. When it comes to meat, I'm actively trying to reduce my use of animal products, specifically flesh. So love cheese. That is probably my top go-to safe food. I can eat any kind of cheese, just straight up. Don't need any accoutrement, just straight up cheese, no matter what kind of cheese. But when it comes to meat, I'm really squirrely about it. Not just in my mouth, but with my hands. I don't want to touch it or feel it or see any kind of sinew or, like any evidence that it used to be part of an animal, which actually tells me I'm on the right track, moving away from consuming flesh. Seafood's going to be a tough one, although it's similar category, and I've gone back and forth with shrimp. It's a love-hate. You know, I'll eat it like for several years, and then I won't touch it for several years. Definitely a texture thing. Things like oysters, I have no issue with until about like 4 or 5 bites in, and I'm like, what am I doing with my life? This is really weird. I can't take it. Yeah, textures are definitely a thing. And this is really common for the neurodivergent community. I'm thinking about the concept of spoons. I don't know if you know about spoon theory, but there's also the physical spoon piece where someone who experiences neurodivergence in whatever expression that is through spectrum of autism, ADHD, OCD, any kind of mental health challenges, CPTSD. Some people who fall under that umbrella have a favorite spoon. They also have a physical and emotional response to situations when perhaps that favorite spoon is not available. I definitely dig through the utensil drawer to find just the right one and get very distressed. Perhaps not outwardly, because I have been fucking masking for so long. I try to keep it in, but my partner knows this about me. I had to say, this is not the right spoon. I need a different spoon. I'm going to go swap this spoon out for another spoon. I'm the same way with forks. If it's too big or hefty, like I can't do it. And we have multiple sets mixed in, you know, combined from our respective bachelor and bachelorette pads. And there are a few forks that are like oversized, just smaller than like a serving fork. But I call them trowels. They're too fucking big. They weigh too much in my hand. They don't sit right in my fingers as I'm consuming food. I just can't do it. Like, fuck a trowel. I want a regular fork. Very particular about that. If you all want to know more specifics, I suppose I could share photos if someone is interested. Like, what does that favorite spoon look like? What is that favorite fork? It's definitely a challenge to share these things. Also, I know that it is a safe space because I have control over this space. I have control over the production process, the editing, and all of that. While my website is public, as is the podcast page, I'm only sharing with specific audiences. So I also know that within that audience, and certainly broader audiences, people out there, listeners, you probably know, at least one of you knows, or can relate to having a favorite spoon, to having an emotionally charged relationship with food, and also understanding this concept and having experience with safe food. So that is why I felt like it was important to share. And it's something that came up time and time again throughout the trip, not only through experiences with restaurants and roadside snacks and things like that, but also sharing meals with people in their homes. You know, it was a really big deal. I was so well taken care of. And as I'm thinking back on this, like, there were no foods that were triggering in any spot that we stayed, which is pretty cool. I think it's a coincidence as well, because it wasn't like there was conversation ahead of time about, like, you know, everyone asked about dietary restrictions and things like that. I'm pretty open. You know, I wasn't going to give like the whole list of like, you know, these are textures I can't do and these are tastes I can't do and things like that. Because I will suffer through it if it's a texture issue or whatever. You know, I will still eat it. If I need to eat, if I'm hungry enough, I'll fucking eat anything, right? Unless it's mayonnaise. I draw the line there. Absolutely no mayonnaise. For the magnifying glass, I told you I wanted to share more about the casino experience in Reno, but more broadly, this idea of logistics. I think it's important also to share how I approached the planning process for this trip, knowing the huge dynamic and complex scope of the thing, right? 30 days, there were at least 26 planned overnight destinations to include, you know, some clients, some friends, some family, and also places where I had no connections, where I was just sort of making a guess as to what might work. It was a huge project with a lot of moving parts. As I've also shared as well, there were a lot of changes and kinks and challenges that we encountered in real time as it was unfolding, which presented opportunities to shift and adapt and go in a different direction or make those changes on the fly. So that was challenging. On top of that, myself and my travel companion both have anxiety, are both triggered by all kinds of different environmental, emotional, and other types of factors that were ever present at every moment along the way. That baseline being we're traveling, and traveling gives us both anxiety. Driving gives us both anxiety and also parking. That is something that we share. You know, if we're unfamiliar with a place, it's always anxiety making to figure out, like, how do we get around, but also how do we safely stop and, you know, transition to getting out of the vehicle, which involves parking. In conversations since the trip, we have talked about what things might be like if we didn't take that specific responsibility, if we removed the element of driving, the actual travel piece, you know, navigation, all of that logistics. If we remove those pieces, what might the experience be like? That feels much more like leisurely and recreational when I think about it. Like, could I relax if it were like on a train and I didn't have to worry about the driving or the navigation or any of that? Like, I don't know, because I also really struggle with feelings of being trapped. It's one of the reasons why I committed to not fly again. It's definitely at the top of the list of reasons why I will not ever participate in a cruise where I am not only trapped on a boat, but trapped in the large, mysterious expanse of a deep, dark, black ocean. Who even knows what's going on inside of there, right? That is way too overwhelming for me to even think about. But how did I approach this knowing all of these factors would be in play? So certainly my travel companion and I prioritize conversations proactively in the planning process as we're gearing up to have this experience together. Like, what are some strategies and tools and checklists for what can we do to support ourselves effectively and also each other? What do we do if conflict arises? How are we going to navigate that? Like, what are our go-to strategies? So we had several conversations about that, which was really, I felt, healthy and productive. It certainly helped in the heat of a moment when we experienced the anxiety, either together or on our own while we're sharing this experience, to be able to check in with each other, kind of help regulate ourselves, help support each other when we needed it. We didn't always get it right. And if we had to do it over again, I think there are some things that we learned about ourselves and each other that would help us make different decisions depending on kind of the external stimuli and the other factors that were happening. I think we'll be better equipped next time. At the same time, we did really fucking well considering all of that context, all of the emotional, physical, and other triggers and challenges that were going on. I think we did remarkably well, you know, not getting enough sleep some nights, shaming our hunger to, you know, an uncomfortable point because we wanted to just like get to the next place or whatever. I definitely think we could do better next time. And we did remarkably well. I'm really fucking proud of us for making it through that. So outside of those kind of proactive conversations in the planning process, there was that whole logistical piece, which is what I kind of really wanted to dive in this segment on. How did I plan this? So number one, I know AI came up in my conversation with Ruby. You're going to hear it come up again in a future episode, penultimate episode in this season, my conversation with Kate. I'll give you a little bit of a spoiler. That is going to be a central topic that I dive into for season two of the podcast in 2026. But I did consult it as a resource for some of the logistics planning. I had some very specific parameters. You know, I could have easily used a route planner to map the shortest distance across all of these different overnight destinations to make sure that I, you know, got to each place as quickly as possible. But that was not what this trip was about. I wanted to maximize slowing down. I wanted to avoid like major interstates as much as I could without using up too much time on back roads. So there were little aspects of the scenic route. I mentioned the state roads through Vermont, for example. There was some of that throughout the entire experience. But there were also other considerations and parameters too, layers of complexity that if I had gone in manually or like in an analog way, it already took me months to plan the thing anyway, but that physical and mental labor would have been, I won't say impossible, but it would have taken more time and bandwidth than I had to dedicate. You know, I would have had to be managing multiple resources for research and a lot of like overlaying different spreadsheets and maps and all of that. So I did consult AI for the route planning piece. There's some parameters that I included. Like I wanted to make sure that on average, we were not physically driving more than around 6 hours a day, which is laughable as I say this now, because one of the ways in which AI failed was not considering the other pieces of what a road trip experience involves, like stopping for gas and meals and bathroom breaks and stretch breaks and walking and things like that. Yeah, it was, I think on average, it was closer to like 9 or 10 hours, maybe. I'll have to do that math and actually like do the math of the median drive time for the entire 30-day period. But I wanted support. I needed support in that moment to figure out like mileage based on the distance, average like miles per gallon. What might I need to budget for fuel, for example? Math is not my strong suit, right? I definitely had my calculator out as I was planning the budget piece. For logistics, at least around accommodations, there were some other specific parameters as well. You know, at a high level, like I did not want to give my money to assholes. That is one of Amanda's famous catchphrases, right? Don't give your money to assholes. That absolutely speaks to our values alignment in terms of where we sit with capitalism and where we are in this country and how we use our economic power and our resources and privileges. So I was like, I don't want to give my money to corporations. I could stay at a big ass hotel chain anywhere. That's not what this is about. I want to keep it small. I want to keep it local, independent as much as possible. So I know whatever I'm investing, those dollars are going to providing for a family, right? They're going to providing for a livelihood of an individual, a human that is not directly tied to, you know, this profiteering fucking scheme. I've made the reference to B&B as an actual bed and breakfast. I did not use Airbnb as a resource with the exception of one accommodation because that was Like it's a private and independently owned campground, but their only mechanism for bookings was through Airbnb. So I did ultimately use that. So I used AI, but I also used search engine to identify possibilities for lodging within specific areas. And then I drilled down, went to each of those resources, their local websites. I booked directly through the places as often as possible, although there were like a handful of places that did their bookings through booking.com. So there were some reservations made through those platforms. But largely, you know, I've tried to make as informed of choices as I could make based on the parameters and the values that I went into this experience with. There were a few outliers that ended up, you know, we discovered after the fact it wasn't exactly what we were expecting. And perhaps if given another opportunity, I would make another choice. I won't go into that, but certainly one of those was Reno. I do not recall on the website of the place that I stayed, there ever being like obvious language that it was a casino environment. It was called a resort, which is arguably like should have been a red flag to me anyway. But also it's downtown Reno. And I was looking for any hotel accommodation that was not attached to a casino. Based on the information that I saw on the website, perhaps I did not read it through thoroughly enough, but I was like, oh shit, I found one that's not attached to a casino. But it turns out every place in downtown Reno is either a casino, part of it, attached to it, or shared space with one. As far as core values and ethics go, I am completely uncomfortable with and against gambling altogether. There have been people in my life who experienced gambling addiction. I cannot relate to that at all. I've always been repulsed of the idea. I am assuming that it's probably because I came from a financially scarce background, low socioeconomic class into working class, but certainly lived below poverty level for most of my childhood, all of my childhood, and most of my adulthood. It just never made any sense to me, never resonated. I was never excited about the idea of wiping my ass with $5 bills. It's kind of the analogy I was thinking, like, why would I just feed this machine my money? I'm not competitive in any way, so that part of it was never appealing to me. And I'm kind of particular about what games I like to play, and slot machines are not on that list. Nor is poker, you know, blackjack, things like that. It's just not my jam. So the casino environment is like my worst nightmare. It truly is my worst nightmare. And I found myself having accidentally booked with a casino resort. So I get in there, talk about getting in the weeds. I'm going to share in detail. I had to circle the building several times because all I saw was signage for a casino. I was like looking for any signage that said hotel entrance, and there wasn't any. So I ended up calling hotel staff as I'm driving around the block. I'm like, how do I get into this place? There were multiple parking lots, two of which were under construction. So that was very confusing. The way the building was set up, my actual tower that my room was in was like miles away from where I parked my car. And also miles away from anything that I might want or need as far as the facility, which meant the restaurant, the check-in desk, the elevator, all that shit. So I walk for miles and miles and miles inside that place. And I know now, of course, right, that is by design. You know, they want you to stay in the gaming area as much as possible. There are no windows. There are no clocks. It's like everything you need. There's a bar right there. They had multiple bars, actually, on either side of the gaming area. And yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot. Very overwhelming and not a place I wanted to spend any time. It was like the opposite of a relaxing, like low-key experience like I was hoping to have my first and only times in Nevada. Lesson learned. That on top of the Caesar salad experience, like I will never go back. Like you're not going to catch me in the desert. Not going to fucking happen. If I drive through it ever again, it's going to be swiftly. I'm not going to spend any damn time there. But yeah, the the Reno experience was definitely a standout moment as far as logistics are concerned. On the flip side of that, like the positive side, there were several places, especially towards the end of the trip where I was traveling solo again, and it had kind of sprung for, let's say, more deluxe accommodations. There was a bed and breakfast in Missoula, Montana, my pre-final stop before Seattle, that was amazing. There ended up being some kind of hiccup with the reservation. They changed my room unexpectedly before I arrived, but what I ended up with was perfect. There was like a private balcony. It was very quiet. It was absolutely gorgeous scenery, and there was ample space. Huge bathroom, a huge bed, living area. They had a jet tub, which was like exactly what the doctor ordered. By the time, you know, day 29, day 30 rolled around, of course, all the accommodations with friends and clients were amazing. All of my needs were met and then some, but more importantly and more impactfully, it felt really special and profound to be able to see these people, like meet them where they are and really kind of bear witness to them in their element and feel a part of that. In some cases, with families, you know, a part of the family, not an outsider, not an accessory, just like fully integrated in the experience. It was really, really amazing. There definitely were some not so great moments as well. Mostly with temperature regulation. It was April, so it was a bit chilly, like outdoor temperature. Pretty much everywhere we stayed was a bit chilly. And so a lot of the facilities had the heat on and I was sweltering. There were multiple times where I'd have to open the window, even though it might be like 40 or 50 degrees outside. I told my travel companion, like, please, here, you can take all of my extra blankets. You know, but I need this fresh air. You can always put more on and I can never take any more off. Like once I am down to, you know, skivvies. So that was tough. But yeah, the campground was amazing. Got to spend some time in a yurt. One of the standout places, I think maybe the final one I share before we move into the megaphone segment, it was this tiny little hole-in-the-wall motel in North Platte, Nebraska. So I shared in a previous solo episode in episode 7 that Nebraska was a slog. Anyone who's ever traveled through it knows what I mean when I say that. I remember stopping in Cheyenne, Wyoming en route to Nebraska. And I stopped for a bite to eat at this little greasy spoon diner. And the person behind the counter asked me where I was headed. I said, you know, I've got 4 or 5 hours left on the road today. I'm headed to North Platte. And she's like, oh my God, that is the most boring drive. She's like, good luck. I was like, oh, you know, I knew it was going to be bad. So arriving at that destination was such a relief. Like, I think it could have looked, smelled, or felt like anything, and I would have just been so grateful to have a place to lay my head for the night. But this specific place was so charming and so quiet, off the beaten path, nowhere near an airport, right? It felt very safe. Like I said, it was quiet. I walked into the office, and the person at the desk was very happy to see another person. He's like, I've been in the back shredding documents for hours. He's like, this is a nice change of pace. I get into the place and there's signage everywhere inside and out of this facility. This is no smoking, no smoking, no smoking. Now, you all know by now, of course, that I am a smoker. That's fine. I'm respectful. You know, everyone I visited on this trip is also non-smoking. So I came prepared. Like, I have my own designated little portable ashtray and I'm going to keep a safe distance from your home and your belongings. I know this shit is gross. I'm going to, like, you know, make sure to not contaminate your space. So I was very, very fastidious about that. So I was prepared. I'm like, of course, I'm not expecting to smoke at this motel. I see all the signage for non-smoking. Then I go into the space, into the room. Like I said, it was a motel setup. So direct entrance from the outside. And it smells like stale cigarette smoke and more. Like, I was transported back to my maternal grandmother's home growing up. And while that would have probably been a turnoff and totally disgusting to any other person going into that environment, there was such a wave of calm and comfort over me. I think even though that was one of my shortest nights of rest, it was also my highest quality rest. I feel like I slept better there than almost anywhere else, or it was a top contender for highest quality rest. And I definitely did not expect that. So shout out to them. You'll hear more about these specific places in the final episode for this season. I want to make sure to carve out time and space for acknowledgments, not only for guests and my hosts, but also some of these really cool small businesses that before this experience, I did not know existed.
Attention Confidential is sponsored, produced, and distributed by Self Magnitude LLC, an ethical microbusiness on a mission to transform how you see yourself. It is hosted by Maggie Green, personal brand and style strategist for weirdos and queerdos of all ages and gender expressions, who is also the face and voice behind Self Magnitude, helping people feel seen since 2020. If you're looking for support on embodying all aspects of your identity, and showing up as your radically authentic self in person, in print, and online, please visit Maggie's 100% DIY website at selfmagnitude.com.
As I'm thinking about all of the conversations with my hosts, clients, family, friends, everyone that made this Tragic Optimist tour what it was, a prevailing message as a reminder to myself, but also for any of you out there who might be holding on to shit, physical or metaphorical baggage, my message for you is this: you are not what you carry. You're not what you carry. When I say that, of course, it's not so much about stuff, although I think that is valid as well, you know? I am not the contents of my suitcase. In spite of what New Brunswick might think, I am not defined by the items contained within my vehicle. I am not the emotional baggage that I choose or choose not to carry with me or let go, whether or not it is serving me. You aren't either, right? You're not the sum of all your parts, or the sum of all your experiences. You're both of those things and more. My best friend and travel companion, Hannah, who I've mentioned throughout this season, says all the time, we contain multitudes. And it is true. And I'm saying this, like I said, as a reminder to myself, but also for anyone out there who needs to hear it. What is going on inside of you, the weight that you carry on your shoulders and your mind, on your heart, that's not who you are. Right? You're working through it. You're processing it. You're doing your fucking best with the resources and the knowledge that you have. And don't ever, ever sell yourself short, minimize, or shrink because of the weight that you carry. And I don't mean physical weight, although sometimes it feels fucking heavy. You know, I use this analogy of a backpack sometimes with my clients. All of these things, these mindsets, these thought patterns, behaviors that you were taught, you know, rules and standards and expectations that you've internalized, other people's shit that wasn't even yours to carry, that you internalized. You're not what you carry. You're not any of those things. You're all of those things and more. There's room and space for change and learning and growth and all of that. And more than that, you are you, just exactly as you are, imperfect and flawed and human and beautiful. You contain multitudes. That's pretty liberating.
The original music, as featured on Attention Confidential, was written, composed, and produced by Christopher Colley Biondi, a deaf pianist, composer, and dear friend in Central Kentucky who generously provided his skills and talent to support the launch of this podcast.
That's all for this episode of Attention Confidential, but of course, the conversation doesn't end here. I encourage you to keep exploring, keep questioning, and most of all, keep sharing your stories.
If today's conversation spoke to you, please pass it on. And if you have a story of your own you'd like to showcase, I am here and ready to listen. You can find all past and future episodes at selfmagnitude.com/podcast. And until next time, remember this, your voice matters.